But if we don't have the executive leadership buy-in and alignment to why this is important for business, a lot of it can fall flat.
Welcome to We're Only Human, a podcast focused on blending research and practical advice to help today's HR, talent, and learning leaders improve business outcomes. Let's welcome your host, Ben Eubanks.
Hello, everyone. This is Ben Eubanks, host of We're Only Human. So glad to have you here today. So I've actually had six different conversations today, and what's interesting is that three of them, about to be four, have all focused around diversity and inclusion. More and more companies are realizing that this is not just something that's interesting, something that matters, right? I think we're past that initial hurdle of why we need to focus on this. But now we're to the point of, okay, what do I do now, right? We realize this is important. We realize that this has some measure of significance for the business and for us as business leaders. And so what are the key things we need to be doing? And so I'm really excited today with the conversation because we have two really sharp guests for you, not just one, but two, to share some good ideas and good takeaways and things like that. So we have Carol Jackson from Mercer and Stacia Garr from Red Thread Research. Welcome, ladies. Good to have you on here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
Good to be here.
Absolutely. So, Carol, let's start with you. Tell us a little about who you are and what you do.
Sure. So my name's Carol Jackson. I'm based in Colorado, and I work in Mercer's Global Diversity and Inclusion Practice, and specifically I lead our research and product development efforts. And I've actually worked with Stacia in the past at Burson Associates. It's kind of how we even got started on this research. And I'll let her kind of explain that after she gives her background.
Great. Thanks, Carol. Hi, I'm Stacia Garr, and I lead with my partner Danny Johnson an organization called Red Thread Research. We are a human capital research and advisory firm that focuses on talent management, diversity and inclusion, learning and careers, and the technologies that enable them. As Carol said, she and I worked together, it seems like forever ago, when it was Burson and Associates, and we got reconnected over our love and passion over diversity and inclusion and technology and how technology can enable organizations to change the way that they approach D&I.
Interesting. So, Carol, I want to throw this first question to you. So Stacia just said she's got a passion for this, and you two both have a shared passion for it. Obviously, it's what you get to do every single day. And so you're hearing this probably more often than I am, but D&I is a huge concern for employers, right? There's so much information coming together about why this is more than just a good thing to do, right? Instead of just being just the right thing, it's also a thing that impacts the business to some degree. And so there are some really interesting technologies and things out there that are helping employers to improve this. So what are you seeing in terms of problems that this technology are trying to solve?
Sure, sure. You know, the surprising, maybe surprising, but we've really found that there are just dozens of problems that the technologies are trying to solve. In our Mercer research and consulting, we find that companies face both issues with individuals and also issues at the organizational level. So on one hand, we find that these organizations are trying to educate their employees and their leaders to mitigate their individual biases and trying to drive more inclusive behaviors with their teams on a daily basis. On the other hand, when we think about kind of the broader organizational perspective, they're examining many times long-standing practices to determine if and where they're potentially helping or hurting the diversity of their workforce. So when we look at the technologies coming to market, we're finding that they're trying to sometimes solve individual, sometimes trying to solve organizational issues. And then in the research that we just conducted with Red Thread, we actually asked the technology vendors about the problems they're trying to solve. And what we heard, the top three issues, 43% of the vendors were trying to reduce unconscious bias, especially in support of clients' efforts to attract and retain a diverse workforce. 33% really were trying to address the lack of analytics and insights into D&I within organizations, oftentimes which are used to, you know, make decisions on where to focus. And then 30% were helping clients address an inadequately diverse talent pipeline. So really trying to make sure that you have a diverse talent pool coming into the organization and then being able to advance into the leadership ranks.
Interesting. So that was actually, again, going back to this, I had this conversation earlier with someone. They were talking about how they had found plenty of things on the recruiting side, lots of things around talent acquisition. Let's try to bring in as diverse a group as we can.
Right.
They said, the problem is we don't have the internal practices and things in place to help them flourish. And so we're bringing in this really great crop of diverse talent and then just letting them die on the vine and not advancing them or promoting them and moving them on. And so there's definitely, it's not just a single point to solve all these problems. There's not a silver bullet that I've found.
Right, definitely not.
So Stacia, help us out here. What sort of things, she talked a little about the ways these vendors are approaching it. What are some of the areas that you're seeing? Any examples that you can give to kind of support how employers can use these technologies or how some of the vendors are approaching this? Because I look at the vendors and things, I'd love to stay on top of that, but I'm not in tune with that many. I know you're fully up to date on this. I'd love to hear some examples and ideas from you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when we think about this space, there's actually two ways that we approached it. And part of this is just a historical artifact of how we were doing the research. But one way we looked at it was just who is in this space? So who's developing technology here? And we identified three primary types of vendors in the space. One that we call D&I focused vendors. And so these are vendors whose primary business is helping organizations address their D&I challenges. So an example of that may be a vendor whose product only focuses on reducing unconscious bias during hiring. So that's one type. A second type is a D&I feature vendor. So this is a vendor who offers a technology that applies more broadly but has features or functionalities that cater specifically to D&I needs. So an example of this might be a recruiting software vendor whose product can make all resumes or names or identifying information blind so as to minimize unconscious bias. The third type is what we call a D&I-friendly vendor. So these are vendors whose practices and approaches may help an organization with their diversity inclusion efforts, but that's not their primary focus or often even a big part of their marketing of the technology. So those are the types of vendors who are in the space. But in terms of which talent categories they're devoted to, what we found actually mimicked what it sounds like you're hearing in your conversations, Ben, and that is that a large percentage of organizations and vendors in particular are focused on talent acquisition. So 43% of the vendors in our study, and we have 109 vendors in the study, 43% of them are focused on talent acquisition. So just different practices for getting that diverse talent in. We then had three other categories. So one is engagement and retention, and 12% of our vendors were focused there. Development and advancement. So that's the learning, leadership development, et cetera. We had 9% there, and then 26% were focused on D&I analytics. So really kind of a wide range, but I think the thing that's striking for me is that nearly three-quarters of these vendors are focused either on bringing talent in or measuring what's happening, not on actually doing something different. So it's a huge opportunity, I think, for new vendors who are trying to come in this space, because the doing is where we know that we're going to be able to move the needle.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, that measurement piece is really interesting because, I mean, I think about the ways that we've measured diversity in the past, and I think back to my days of like doing affirmative action plans, things like that, and those don't really move the needle because they just look at people as a quota, as a number, versus looking at the value that they can bring, looking at it from the perspective of how can they make this organization better, and how can I encourage my leaders to see that as well. You know, the managers that are making decisions every day, how can we help them to see that and to make decisions that align with that versus just saying, oh, if we've got to hire three more of these and two more of those in order to hit our numbers. It's a different sort of conversation. So, Carol, what about the analytics piece there? How are they helping organizations to get better at measuring D&I interventions, how to measure the impact on the business potentially even? I'm kind of curious what you're hearing.
Yeah, there's, one of the things that's really critical is even having access, easy access to the data. A lot of our clients struggle with having data sources that are easily accessible, can be analyzed quickly, and yes, definitely wanting to measure the impact of their existing interventions, but as importantly, really wanting to understand where to focus the interventions, where they should take action. So we're finding that having access to the analytics, being able to see the flow of talent into the organization, to be able to look by business unit, by geography, by department, how talent is advancing and who's leaving and how are they being paid, really having access to that data is critical. And in the research, we found nearly 30 vendors really focusing on this D&I analysis and monitoring space. It's actually the second biggest in the study, as Stacia just mentioned, outside of talent acquisition. And we find that these vendors are really, yes, looking at representation and other kind of key performance indicators of how a diverse talent pool is making its way through your organization. It's making it really easy to see if there's any pay inequities. There's a few cool vendors looking at organizational networks and who different employee subgroups are interacting with and what the implications are of that. And then, of course, looking at the talent acquisition processes as well and making sure that we have dashboards so that so we can get down to that action level for frontline managers, making sure that they can see the data and have awareness so that they can then obviously take the action. And I know, Stacia, you talked to several vendors in this space and even a client using one, so maybe you want to talk to that that one specific case example.
Yeah, so there are a number of examples in the report, so you know it's kind of hard to pick which one is the best. But you know, one that I wanted to bring up because this story was just so compelling, actually came from the vendor is one called Head Start, and the company that was using was the consulting firm Accenture in their UK division. And what they did, I think, was really interesting is they built this data set that helps you to better understand what the candidates, both what their skills are, but also a bit more about the candidate holistically. So they've done interesting things like pulling in the candidate's grades, but also, you know, given where that candidate went to school, kind of what the typical socioeconomic status would be. Because we know that if some, just as an example, if someone came from one type of background where they weren't as socioeconomically, you know, as high up on the scale, it might mean a lot more if that person got into Oxford or Cambridge than somebody who kind of had a whole history of that. So kind of taking into account through data some additional insight. That's what the technology does. Anyway, so what Accenture was able to do is that they implemented this technology to help them with identifying candidates who may not have previously been, they may have been overlooked, let's say, based on the previous technology or some unconscious bias, matching those people to opportunities given their insights, and then providing the managers with some supporting information about what they might want to focus on. And they paired this with an overall focus on diversity and inclusion through their entire candidate experience to provide just a much more realistic job preview, which is something we know, you know, from our broader understanding of talent acquisition is really important. Anyway, the results that they saw were really impressive. They've seen a greater demographic mix in the education, gender, and ethnic diversity within the candidate pool, which is about 26,000 people. And they saw a 5 percentage point increase in female hires, a 2.5% increase in Black and ethnic minority hires. And then what's really remarkable is their incoming class of technical talent is just over 50% female. So that's for technical roles. And the reason we thought this was remarkable is because often in doing this research, I hear, well, you know, we'd like to find female talent, technical talent, but it just doesn't exist. It's a pipeline problem. But their leader at Accenture actually said, you know, if you're using the same tools and technique and data, you're not going to find these people. But if you're trying something different, you will, and what we're seeing is an example of that. So it's a beautiful example of using data and technology and a different approach to drive to some meaningful outcomes.
Very, very interesting. I love that story. I love the example. If you look in the same places you've always looked, you'll get the same people you've always found, basically. That, you know, that butchered that version of the really nice saying that we've always, the quote we always use, but it's the same kind of thing. And if you, that's the conversation I've had a lot lately around, again, this is not a conversation about the AI stuff, but when you hear about these different tools that are automating hiring processes and things like that, people are always worried about the bias. And what I always throw back at them, they're like, you know, the algorithm's biased. I'm like, no, you are. You've been making biased decisions all along, and this is just putting a flashlight on that. That's putting a spotlight on that to show you what you've done so that you can make it right, because it's the reality whether you like it or not. And we've got to face these things. And so I love that example because it shows, number one, that belief, that commonly held belief that, you know, there just aren't enough women in the field for us to be able to recruit enough of them. Well, apparently there are if you look in the right kinds of places. So that really, really interesting story. I love that one. So that was one of the things I was actually going to ask you next. So you got a head start on it, Stacia. I'd love for you to share some of the, for the HR leaders, the business leaders, the kind of people that listen to the show, they're always interested in practical ideas, things to make this really concrete. And I heard Kara earlier said that this is not just about the micro version of how can I help one manager see their candidates as people and as resources versus just, you know, this or that or the other thing, whether it's bias or not, that micro conversation, but also on a macro conversation for an employer to see that diversity is important enough for us to invest in, to support, to possibly use technology to make it happen. So if it's on the micro or the macro view, I don't honestly care. I think there's good insights at both places, but I'd love for you to share some of those things about how employers can get better outcomes for their D&I approaches. What do you got for me?
Yeah, so whenever I talk to an organization about what they should do, it starts with what are you trying to achieve? So it's very easy to dive into a report like we just did and say, oh, there's 109 vendors out there. I want to learn all about them, et cetera. I actually just had a call with someone who was like, well, I just want to know what you're seeing that's innovative. And I said, well, there's lots, but what are you trying to do? Because it doesn't matter if it's innovative, if it's not the right thing, right? So figure out what it is that you're trying to accomplish. So in the Accenture story, they knew they needed a more diverse pipeline, and they also knew that they needed to have a clearer expectation and clearer messaging around what it meant to be a diverse person working at their organization. So they had a dual purpose, and that's part of what made them successful in addition to the technology. So focus first on what are you trying to shift for the organization. Second, I would say understand what the current state is and what the biggest pain points are. And this is where that opportunity is to use that data that Carol mentioned. It's not enough to just have representation data, but what is causing that representation data to be what it is. Develop some hypotheses, whether it's based on, you know, external research, based on conversations with employees, focus groups, et cetera, and then go and test it. So is the reason we're having difficulties with representation or people moving up because of certain policies? Is it cultural? You know, what is it? And then from there, figure out what are the practices and the underlying technology that could support it. So that's very much so at the organizational level. I'm sure Carol has plenty to add, maybe even on the individual level too.
Yeah, that's great. And it actually is just, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach, unfortunately. I think a lot of companies would be thrilled if we could just say, this is going to solve all your problems. But one thing that I have seen either accelerate progress or stop companies in their tracks if they don't do it is aligning the D&I strategy to the business goals, and specifically because D&I efforts require both individual and organizations to take action, you have to be able to articulate your answer, the organization's answer, and even your personal answer to why is diversity and inclusion critical for our business, and then take that out to your workforce so that as you enhance processes, as you roll out new tools or programs, your workforce really understands why. And I think what we have seen over and over again is you can even have some great data that tells you here's where your issue is, here's where the choke point exists, and here's what you should do about it. But if we don't have that higher level, of course, the executive leadership buy-in and alignment to why this is important for business, a lot of it can fall flat, or you're not going to necessarily see the results that you were hoping to see. So I would say that's kind of the number one place to start, is to really kind of create your organizational narrative, interview your key stakeholders, and define why diversity and inclusion is really critical for your business, and thus why these various practices and policies and tools that are going to help you improve diversity and inclusion are worthwhile.
I like
that. And
then
I would add to that.
Go for it, Stacia. Yeah.
I would just add that it's then important to communicate that in an authentic voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that people have a really low tolerance right now if it just comes across as kind of corporate mumbo jumbo, for lack of a more sophisticated term. But
yeah.
It needs to be authentic. Why does it matter here? You know, some of the most powerful communications are ones where your executives are willing to be personal about why something matters to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that element, particularly as we're looking at a younger and more diverse workforce, is really critical.
Right. We definitely see that. And, you know, that's a great point, because I was thinking that in interviews that I've done with stakeholders, trying to align on kind of the organizational message, having that authentic individual message is different. So it's going to be a different reason for your chief legal officer, a different reason for your finance organization, a different reason for your operations. And so, you know, finding kind of that overarching drive, but then being able to communicate that authentically, even at each of us personally, being able to communicate to the people that we're speaking with is really important. And then hopefully, as you start communicating that, then even some of your middle managers and your frontline managers start to be able to articulate their authentic, you know, kind of the here's why this is important.
That actually is perfect. I'm glad Stacia jumped in to say that, because that actually ties in even better with what I was going to say in the first place. So last year was running a hackathon for HR leaders for process improvements, and one of the problems that one of the groups brought up was D&I, working on trying to get better outcomes there. And they said, we really struggle with getting executives to buy into this, and once they do, how do we kind of flow that down so everybody sees that they're not just, you know, giving it a thumbs up in the meeting, but then behind closed doors, you're like, who cares? And so the winning pitch for this hackathon was, the team actually said, we're going to go back, we're going to shoot 30-second videos of our executive leaders talking about a time they felt like they really belonged and they felt like a part of something bigger than themselves. And they're going to share the videos out with the organization so that anybody can see, like, whether this person's diverse or not, they understand what it means when you feel like you belong, when you feel included, and they're going to try to create a stronger culture around that. So I love that piece about authenticity, because that was a great example of someone sharing that back with me about how they were going to do that within their own company, and so I thought you guys would enjoy that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I love that.
Awesome. So, Carol, you two have mentioned a report a couple of times. I know that everybody's going to be really curious to know who those vendors are that are listed here, what their capabilities are, what you think about kind of the future of the space and some of those kinds of ideas and things that are in there. I know that I'm really excited to see the final version of it come out, because I saw the initial research piece come out in the fall, and that's when I kind of tapped Stacia on the shoulder, like, we've got to have this conversation because I want other people to know about this and hear about this. So how can someone connect with you, learn more about the research? And we'll make sure and get a link in the show notes, but how else can they connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely. We have the report for download, and we also have an interactive market map where you can explore the different types of vendors. So it's pretty neat. You can go on and click around if you're interested in vendors that are focused on diversity and inclusion from a learning and development standpoint. You can look at those. So it's a way that you can it's on a website so that you can go there and kind of explore and then also download the report. And that website is info.mercer.edu www.ibm.com/D&I Tech. So we will have those in your notes, I assume, yes?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Perfect.
Awesome. Good deal. This has been so much fun. I have enjoyed this thoroughly. I appreciate both of you for taking time out of your day to join us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. To everybody else, I hope you enjoyed the discussion today. As always, we appreciate you listening. This has been Ben Eubanks, your host. Thank you for listening to We're Only Human, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to We're Only Human. Please take a moment to share this episode with another HR leader who might see it as a valuable resource in their daily work. For more information about the podcast and to see all our show archives, please visit upstarthr.com.